for just about everything for the outdoors. Go to MidwayUSA.com. The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting, brought to you by ElkGrows.com, with your host, elk hunting coach Joe Gillett. You want to hunt elk? They live to hunt elk. Their goal is to share with you what they have learned grinding it out for over 35 seasons, doing what they love. So come on into camp and set a spell. Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunters.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Joe Gillia, and this is your Insights edition of Blue Collar Elk Hunting, where we want to talk and learn about all things elk. And on today's special edition, let me tell you what, if you're an elk hunter, if you have anything to do with wildlife, if the outdoors is your thing, then this is a show for you. We have special guest John Stallone of Howl for Wildlife, an organization whose goal is to promote the conservation and management of fisheries and wildlife through science-based evidence and practices. The focus of today's show is to inform and empower you, our listeners, with information on what has been an important and hot topic throughout the West, Colorado's wolf management plan, and how you, no matter where you live, can get involved as hunters, anglers, to help guide this plan and protect it from those that will be presenting radical versions that, y'all, this could have disastrous impacts and repercussions for generations to come. So, very critical show, very important, and John, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
You betcha.
Always good to catch up with you, Joe, anyway.
Well, you know, this is our opportunity to get some information out there, because really, as soon as I say Howl for Wildlife and people hear wolf management plan, a lot of people confuse the fact that you guys are Howl with, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right.
Especially in the beginning, that happened a lot, and we kind of did that on purpose.
Uh-huh.
Cause I know you've heard of the term green decoy before, where there's certain organizations that parade as, you know, environmental or conservation groups that are not hunter friendly.
Right.
So they're a decoy. They're calling green decoys anyway, basically. And, so we kind of did, we took a page out of that book a little bit, and, we decided that, you know, Howl, the name, and having a wolf being very polarizing would make some of the environmental groups that are opposed to hunting kind of look over us. And obviously eventually that catches up with you, but, so far, thus far, it's kind of helped us out a lot. And plus we also felt it necessary because anti-hunting groups have co-opted the word conservation, that when they're not conservationists, they're preservationists.
Right.
And they've co-opted animals like the wolf. Oh, you know, why can't the wolf be a representative of hunter? I mean, it's literally the best alpha hunter out there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
them and the cougar, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some strategy behind that. Anyway.
Yeah, but and we don't want to say that, it's definitely not that you're against wolves. It's not that you're promoting,
no.
You know, it's it's about doing the right thing for our wildlife in North America through, you know, without using emotion, without using politics, without putting it in those arenas and mm-hmm. letting, you know, the science-based management do its job, right?
Right, right. Yeah, well, I, Hal, Stan, we're definitely not against the wolves. I don't know that we'd be running around promoting wolves either, but, mm-hmm. for the most part, if the management plan is sound, if the science is sound, we'll support it. Because ultimately we want healthy ecosystems. We want undulates to thrive. And I look at it, so my background, just so you know, Joe, I got my master's degree at Colorado State University. Mm-hmm. And I got it in range land management and ecology. So when I look at things, I kind of always look at things as systems. And I think you and I have had this conversation before. I'm of the school of thought that if when you enter into a system, no matter where you enter it, which side you enter it from, there's always going to be an equal reaction on the opposite side of it. So when you look at something, when you come into something, you have to look at things holistically. Mm-hmm. So if there's plans in place that include predators like wolves and bears and so on and so forth, as long as the management plan looks at it from a holistic approach and it's not like, oh yeah, we want wolves back on the landscape, but we don't want you to touch them. We don't want you to manage them. Let them manage the deer herds. So that takes hunters out of the equation. And often, what you'll see is like, you see this up, you know, up in Canada and various places that they have, you know, brown bears and wolves, and there's predator pits. Mm-hmm. There's a lot into it. You know, and the problem is there's your, academics that are putting their input, and then there's practitioners that have hands-on that are not being brought into the fold as much. It's unfortunately, it's more politics than there is science involved when it comes to, especially when it comes to the wolf.
And whenever it comes down to politics, basically you're involving emotions and trying to play off that, right? And there's two things that I want to do, before we move on with that, because I do want people to understand what Howl is as far as being a voice for, the outdoorsman. Whenever you guys, are informed of situations that could take away opportunity or that could hurt the science-based management of areas, the whole goal of HAL is to be just like a pack, one voice together. So you give us an opportunity and a place to be able to make impact by simply clicking on a button to be able to send emails to senators and representatives and people that are the decision makers out there. So that's the whole goal of HAL is to be able to unite us, because we've always talked in the past that there's so many people out there, but we're all a tree falling in the forest. And this is one way for us to get that one voice, that one HAL out there, right? So I just want to make sure that that's clear. If people haven't gone to HAL, HOWL, and it's a .org, correct?
Yes, howlforwildlife.org. I think, I'm just going to double check this real quick, but we had it set up.
So that Hal could also do it, right?
Yeah, howl.org.
Yeah. And while you're doing that as well, is you brought up a word that I want to make sure the listeners understand. You said predator pit. And to a lot of people, unless you've dealt in this or you understand it, a lot of people don't understand what a predator pit is. Can you explain that?
Well, simply put, basically the alpha predators, for really simply, they eat themselves out of the prey. And then there's nothing there but predators, and it becomes a wasteland, even though the habitat is pristine.
Right. And they have to end up going into other areas, or right. they're going to, you know, they're going yeah. to not live, right? So they have to work on that. And it takes a long time for that food source to be able to come back. Because in nature, what would supposedly happen is those animals mm-hmm. would eat themselves out of house and home, and then they would starve to death. They would then die, right. and then their food source would actually start to flourish again, and it would be a process like that.
Right, and it's a very vicious cycle that happens over and over again. And you know, the importance of being, again, going back to what I was saying, balanced, so mm-hmm. that if you look at it, I know they use the cup being full analogy, and the spillover. As the water keeps filling up in the cup, the spillover is what we hunters usually take to keep the cup from spilling over. And so, you know, in a perfect world, you're taking the surplus. You're taking enough to keep the habitat healthy, because there's been situations too. Like, if you look up, the history of the kibab, okay, which is a very, kibab is actually now is a, what's the word I'm looking for here? Like a success story, basically. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't. It was an epic fail, in management. And what ended up happening is to make a real short story of it is originally, deer up there were amazing. It was flourishing. Hunters came in, this is before regulated hunting, and, you know, the population got lower, but not to extinction or anything like that, but just got lower. And they came up with this awesome idea, because they put cattle up there also, that we're going to get rid of all predators. And they literally wiped out every predator, any predator that they could take down, from bobcats, coyotes, wolves, bears, whatever, they took it out of there. Which caused the deer herd to explode. And, you know, kibab was pretty inaccessible to humans. I mean, for the most part back then. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, you know, it has a nice highway, goes up there now. We didn't have that many hunters in there. And there was cattle ranchers and so on. So between the cattle and the deer, they destroyed the habitat, literally destroyed it. So they realized that you can't have one without the other. This is going back to what I was saying earlier.
Yeah.
And eventually they found their correct balance of hunters taking what they need to take and keeping the prey population at a certain and the predator population at a certain level. And it's all about, you know, having these thresholds, and what's sustainable. You'll hear that word turn around. What's a sustainable
all the time.
Amount?
Absolutely.
And you'll hear, you know, them talk about carrying capacity. Carrying capacity is like how many animals can live on a landscape.
Right.
And so all those things are important. So when you're talking about wolves and bears and, there's very successful, you know, very successful, examples of what that could be and what that could look like. You know, from a standpoint of, from a hunter, I definitely don't want any more competition. I don't want more competition from hunters, and I definitely don't want competition from right. other animal four-legged hunters, you know? Yeah. So, but the fact of the matter is the wolves are coming. Actually, before we jump into the wolves themselves, mm-hmm. You started touching on this. I wanted, when you were explaining how we keep coming across this roadblock. So,
you keep coming across this what?
Roadblock.
Okay. Oh, okay.
With uh-huh. hunters. That hunters are so apathetic about what doesn't concern them or doesn't affect them. Specifically.
Yeah, they kind of leave me alone and let me do my thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, kind of, but even more so within hunting. So what I'm talking about is like the guy who hunts whitetail in New York doesn't give a crap about the guy in Colorado who hunts elk.
Right.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
And we see it all the time because we put these actions up. And I don't know what the exact statistics are, so I'm going to just throw out some arbitrary numbers to you. But let's say we get, you know, 10,000 people to sign something. Mm-hmm. 7,000 of those 10,000 people are doing it because they really care about that is their thing. That's their niche.
That's their passion.
That's what they're involved in.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. That's what they're involved in. And then the other 30%, and that might even be a high number. So I'm saying 70-30. 30% are the people who just care about hunting and want to see a fellow hunter thrive. And we need to get the whole country, because Health and Wildlife has like 40,000 users and something like 25,000, I think, members. That's a super small portion. We're 16 million hunters. And they say 15 to 18 million, okay? But I'm going to use 16 million hunters in the United States. Could you imagine if 16 million hunters, every time a hunting bill popped up, either pro-hunting or against hunting, those 16 million people jumped on board and made their voices heard? Say, no, we want this. This is, we don't want this to go away. There's no politician in the world. They would backpedal so fast. They wouldn't even know what the hell hit them. They wouldn't know what the hell hit them, because we see that kind of reaction now with just a few, with thousands. Could you imagine millions? Could, even if it was 15%, 20% of the 16 million, we're talking about 3 million people sending an email every single time. And it's the easiest thing in the world. Like, it really takes no time. It's like 45 seconds of your life, and you just did more for wildlife, more for hunting than you ever did, ever.
And not only, and what's so, not only do you just push a button, but there's information there. There's information that's valuable for us to be able to, make a sensible argument or promote in a way that is not just like some kind of, well, you're on that side of the political party. That's why you're that way. I mean, it's a way of us being intelligent with how we talk to other people and solid ambassadors. So there's great information there, you know, for people to be able to learn that as well.
That's a great point. So, like specifically with this wolf thing, do you know how many hunters commented when we were posting stuff originally when we released the action for people to get involved? How many hunters were like, shoot, shovel, shut up, or we don't want any stinking wolves, and and I'm like, oh my God, that first off, the shoot, shovel, shut up. I'm not going to tell you to do what you want to do. You do what you want to do. You want to do something illegal, do something illegal, but it ain't. I mean, first off, where's the shut up part? You know, the first rule of Fight Club is don't talk about Fight Club. Okay.
Yeah,
that's number
yeah.
one. Don't put that out there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, but this, you're not doing anybody any services by talking that way. Like you're
absolutely,
you know, like you're not helping hunting. You're not helping your view. You're not helping, you know, anything by saying stuff like that. Like if you can't be intelligent about something, just shut your mouth. Just don't even open your mouth, because you're going to hurt what you're trying to avoid. Like you're going to give more fuel to the fire.
Absolutely. Yeah. An important point there is, if 5% of this nation is pro, pro hunting, right? And we have 5% that is anti-hunting. That leaves 90% of people out there with no opinion or opinions to be molded. And by us doing or saying things like that, that make no sense, that, you know, do not represent us in the way we want to, then we are actually casting our own vote against us. We're helping to convince somebody that has an opinion that, man, maybe these aren't good people, right?
Right. Yeah, we're in a political climate right now, as well as a social climate, that we as a society are so easily influenced. I mean, we look at an Instagram post and we're like, oh, I already got an opinion about this. Mm-hmm. Like, we can see a picture. And, you know, this is stuff that I've talked about a bunch. Like, we almost got to police ourselves in a way. We got to carry ourselves to a different standard because it's so easy for the other side
Absolutely. To
run their narrative. Like, they can, with a picture, they can sway minds. Right. We don't have that ability. We can't put a picture up there that says, oh, we put all the funding, we're the number one group that's out there doing actual boots on the ground conservation, we're putting animals back. We can't do that. Even with infographics, it doesn't have the same whatever. But you could put a little picture of a dead Bambi on the side of the road and, you know, a hunter standing over it. And even though the situation may have been this guy stopped because the deer got hit by a car and he's trying to help it. But no, what they'll give you their narrative on it. And guess what? That's a narrative that's going to take off.
Yeah, because that's the first thing that hunters jump to is like, you know, we're conservationists. No, not all hunters are conservationists, man. We are, you know, taking from the resource out there. How many people are actually doing something that they can take a picture of that is showing conservation, that is, you know, helping the habitat, that is developing that is helping our animals thrive? That's conservation. But everybody always jumps on that. And you're right. It's so much easier for the other side to provide for their narrative, when for us, we have to actually deal with things within our own groups that give us a bad black eye or give us a bad look. So, totally get it. That's why as ambassadors, to actually get people out there, to show them, to share your harvest, you know, to talk about the passion, talk about the things that you understand about these animals, how intimate we are with them firsthand. When you start doing things like that, it's contagious and it's intelligent. And it's not just, you know, if you don't like it, don't look. Yeah, you know,
exactly. I hate that. You know, I hate that mentality because it's just not that way anymore. I've used this example a couple of times, but it's, you know, back in the day in the 70s and 80s and 90s even, but let's talk 60s, 70s and 80s, we would put a deer on the hood of the car and drive it to the city center and you know, show it off, right?
Right.
Now that city center is a grip and grin picture on Instagram, and now it's not just your hunting buddies seeing and not just the people that are accepting of it, it's everyone. And it's very out there, easy to be interpreted. And yes, you could put the best, and I'm not saying don't do this because I'm all about you putting comment or whatever on there that says exactly what's going on but the problem is most people don't read, you know, what's right. What goes with the picture. They just look at the picture.
Well, they can take the picture and make it into a meme, right? So.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, well, I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time on that because we wanted to talk about this wolf situation. Let me give you some background. So Proposition 114, this is back in November of 2020, mm-hmm. Colorado voted 50.9% of the votes were in favor. That's 1,590,299 votes in favor of having wolves reintroduced. So just over half the votes said they wanted wolves in Colorado, which is crazy to me. Because if you take that number, 1,590,000, it's crazy to me because Colorado has 1.1 million hunters. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. So by my calculations, if every hunter stood up, went out and voted alongside all the ranchers and all the non-hunting citizens that were against wolves, I mean, to put it plainly, they would have mopped the floor with them. Okay. So what was also astounding, we were talking a little bit about this earlier here, is that the wolf supporters raised $2.4 million in contributions to support the reintroduction. Conversely, hunters and ranchers only raised just over $1 million. Mm-hmm. So the long and short of it is the time to oppose the wolf reintroduction has come and gone. Ciao, ciao. It's gone. You know, we sportsmen and women did not make our voices heard in 2020. So like it or not, the wolves are coming.
So like I say, so life is about change, but you can either be a victim of change or you can help direct change. So the whole purpose of what we're talking about today is not to be a victim of it. We've already put ourselves in this situation. Now it's about being proactive and trying to guide that.
Right. Right. So now we have an opportunity to have our voices and our opinions in place for this management plan. Okay. So Proposition 114 states that 250 wolves would be transplanted by December of 2023. And, part of that, there was supposed to be a management plan set in place. Okay. I'm going to read this verbatim here to you. So Prop 14 was designed to require Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission to create and carry out a plan to reintroduce, manage gray wolves by the end of 2023. Under the measure, wolves were set to be reintroduced on Colorado lands west of the Continental Divide. The exact location will be determined by the commission. The commission was to manage any distribution of the state funds that were made available to pay fair compensation to owners of livestock for losses of livestock caused by the gray wolves. The measure directs the state to make appropriations to fund the reintroduction program. So basically what that's saying is 250 wolves are going to be put in place. The commission has the ability to put a management plan in place. But what it's also saying is that the taxpayers are paying for the wolves to be reintroduced, and they're paying for any livestock that they kill for perpetuity. This is anti-hunters love this language because, and they put us a lot of support between this because they know this pacifies the non-consumptive opposition. And what I mean by the non, I'm talking about the ranchers. This pacifies them, you know? So now you lose a little bit of your support from the ranchers and stuff like that because hey, they're going to get paid up to $8,000, up to $8,000 per livestock that can be determined was killed by wolves. So for them, it's like, okay, well, that's in place. It's not my first choice, but so then you lose that support. Now it's just hunters and sportsmen and those that who are completely just opposed because they don't want their dogs being eaten or whatever. But so they get their cake and eat it too, basically, you know. Anyway, so this December, December 9th, Colorado Parks and Wildlife released their draft management plan. While it's not perfect, there's still many reasons why as hunters should show support for it. It's really important. It's imperative that the commission hears our support specifically for the few crucial parts of the plan that are in line with what is good for us and is good for wildlife in general. Mainly that's supporting the objective of the population. So no more than 250 wolves. And once it's reached that and has held that for a number of years, I don't remember what it is. Cause I think if it's an endangered species, I want to say it has to be there for 8 years. Might be three. I don't remember. That's above my pay grade at the moment. But after a certain number of years, if it holds at 250 or if it's going over that, then, they will be listed as game animals and you'll be able to hunt them basically.
Right. Able to manage the numbers.
Yeah. Phase four of the management plan is very important to us. It spells out the lethal methods of take and, it's going to give us, is going to give us the foundation that we need to manage wolves properly in a way that is palatable for hunters. Okay. It also will include monitoring undulate herds, like so elk, deer, antelope, sheep, whatever. And if there's declines in those because in the areas that have wolves, there's triggers put in place to protect that. So basically what's the push to get the, even though I just said the plan is not perfect, what's the push? In coming weeks, the wolf advocacy groups and their supporters will attempt to dismantle the plan in hopes to reach a non-vote or even to scrap the plan completely. By the time, so that by the time that they comes, you know, they come up with something that people could agree on, they will be able to implement their version with a favorable commission. And what do I mean by that? Is, I want to say in June, I think I got this written down here somewhere. So I have my dates. In June, they're going to get four new commissioners, right?
Yeah.
And right now the 11 commissioners that are there are hunter friendly. You know, they believe in hunting. I think most of them are all hunters themselves. So it's the other side's tactic right now is to stall this as long as possible until they can get a commission in there that is not hunter friendly, and then they can push their agenda basically.
Right.
Yeah, it says that Colorado – I have this written down here because I couldn't remember dates. Colorado Parks and Wildlife must finalize a vote on the wolf introduction plan by May of 23 with a deadline to have the wolves physically present by 2023, December 2023. So like I said, even though that wolf management plan still needs refinement, it's in our best – it's our best options right now. And right. Anti-hunting advocates want all lethal take removed from the plan completely. And right now there's legal take in the plan. This current plan must be amended and updated.
You know, I know it's another rabbit hole, John, but lethal take is never off the table because there's a point where some animals would still have to be taken, just not by sportsmen out there. We would actually be somebody would be paid to either trap or to euthanize or to take that animal to keep those numbers down. So instead of, again, the state's making money and utilizing sportsmen to manage the animals like we manage the herd, they end up paying money instead, again, coming out of taxpayers' pocket. So that's just something to think about there. And what I want you to do within what you're talking about here, though, is, you know, give specific, like you said, May is by when they want to adopt this. How do people need to act? Where can they act? And I know they can go to your site and actually see your plan, but I want this to be said a few times through whatever this conversation is.
Sure.
How they can, and specific dates that are important, that are critical, and what they can do to take part in this. More than just, you know, being angry, screaming, sending notes and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. Your best option is to go to Howl for Wildlife, because when you're sending a howl, it's getting to all the commissioners and all the decision makers. We're actually now working there. There is a citizens group that is, put together by hunters. And I don't remember what it's called. It's got an acronym, and I'll have to find that out for you, and you could add it to your show notes. But, they also need to hear from the hunters as well. And we're working on adding that to the system so that, they're also getting your howl. But, for the critical date for us is February 22nd.
Okay. What's happening then?
February 22nd is basically, I think, when they're shutting down the incoming input from the sportsmen, and from anti-hunters as well. But, so from now till then, it's really important for us to have our voices heard. After that, they're going to do whatever deliberating they want to do. They can make whatever tweaks they want to make to this plan to make it a more sound plan. So even though May of 2023 is the commission's deadline, mm-hmm. the deadline for us is February 22nd.
Okay.
So, go show your support for it. Go to Howl for Wildlife, go to the Action Center, and, you know, send a howl. And if you can read the message that's there. So,
and alter the message.
It's not a canned email.
Right. Yes.
It's not a canned email. We upload, depending on the type of action, anywhere from 50 to a couple hundred different variations of the email, because we want the authenticity to be there for the people, the decision makers reading it. It goes out with a different, not only just a different message, it goes out with a different subject line. And our open rate is astronomical. If you look at, like, and I'm just giving this as an example. I'm definitely not throw a Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation under the bus, because I think they do excellent work, and I'm a member myself and have been for a very long time. They have an action center, a version of an action center. It's a form letter, and that form letter goes out, and it goes out from Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation on behalf of you, Joe Hunter.
Right.
Okay. Howl for Wildlife is different. The email comes directly from your email address. It comes from you. It comes from Joe Smith, John Doe, whoever you are. It comes from you direct. So it's way more, way, way, way more powerful. Also, our emails are editable. Is that even a word? I think so. You can edit the email. You can go in there and you can make it your own. Now, be careful with that. Do not get politically charged. Don't talk about how you hate wolves and blah, blah, blah. It's about being supportive of what is being presented. And if you have a educated, suggestion, like a management suggestion, I mean, assuming that you know what you're talking about. If you don't know what you're talking about, it's probably best you don't say anything, but you can add that.
Again,
you can add that in.
Again, because the wolves are going to be introduced. It's not going to do any good to go.
Oh, yeah, we don't need
wolves.
You're not stopping it. That's done.
Yeah, it's happening. So the whole goal is to be intelligent enough to help guide that process, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, yeah. Unfortunately, like I said in the beginning, when we started talking about wolves, the ship has sailed. You had an opportunity to stand up and stop it, and not enough people did. I mean, it was close. I mean, it was 50.9. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, when I look at the numbers, I think it's ridiculous. And to me, it means that, you know, if you only had just over a million, or just under a million and a half people, and you're 1.1 million of you are hunters out there in that state, like, that's just like no brainer to me. Like, you should have, 1.1 million hunters should have been there. Excuse me.
Yeah. You know, and I can tell you even, and here's what's interesting is, you know, for, you take the pro wolf, right? Mm-hmm. We actually, because here in New Mexico, in southern New Mexico, we have the gray wolf that's been introduced.
And the Mexican gray wolf, yeah.
Yeah, Mexican gray wolf. And one of the fears of that is that, you know, that the northern gray actually come down into that area and what
Absolutely.
That could cause to happen, right? So, that, you know, because even the Mexican grays are, which is a smaller wolf, right? Mm-hmm. There's even some controversy about how far north they need to go, within our own state. So,
yeah.
you know, and guys, these are not people. These are not people that you can say, hey, you got to stay north, you got to stay south, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
These are wild animals that, you know, if the numbers get to the point where they need to expand in order to feed themselves, they do, right?
Yeah. They're not going to, they don't read lines. They don't read the laws, you know, it's, they're going to go where they want to go.
And people in New Mexico, if you think that this is a Colorado issue, think again, because they do not know what a border is, right? So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of the thing too, is their argument was they actually were talking about having Mexican wolves all the way up to Denver.
Yes.
Like that was never part of their historic range ever. Matter of fact, where wolves are right now in Arizona and New Mexico, it was already a fringe part, but it's way more north than their historical ranges. Matter of fact, actually, Jim Heffelfinger, okay, he did a podcast with Robbie at Blood Origins. Mm-hmm. That's a very good, if anybody, I'm not trying to plug his podcast here, but if that's a very good episode. If you're interested in New Mexico wolves and Arizona wolves, that is a good episode to listen to, because he was on the forefront of that, and he's a big time hunter and he understands, and he spells out like the politics that were involved in this, that the politics really directed what the science, the quote, I might throw my air quotes up there, the science was saying. So basically what it is they cooked the books on the science to get what they wanted politically.
Right.
And if you don't think that's going to happen in other states with other things, like any time there's a ballot box initiative, you're taking the management out of the true stakeholders' hands. It's going to be a big political thing. It's going to come to politics.
It already happened in Colorado because they passed a bill to reintroduce an animal that's already in the state. So,
right.
That's just proof right there. And exactly. I'll throw another one out there, man, is that if you're really wanting to educate yourself as far as the North American model, as far as what a predator pit is, how it happens and the effect of these animals on each other, go, and I will plug this, man. Jim Huntsman is called The Western Huntsman, and find his episode with Valerius Geist.
Oh yeah. Valerius Geist is the man.
Yep.
Or was the man, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. Lost him. Yes. He passed away, but what he left behind and the work that he did and the studies that he did, are second to none. And this is a man that just speaks directly from the science and the impact and the history, because you start to understand the history. That's like when you talked about, you know, the, traditional area of the Mexican gray wolf, people don't realize that we had jaguars in the country that hunted other predators that kept those numbers down. So, yeah, it's
always a very short, you know, short viewed. Okay, there a lot of these, I'm gonna again air quotes, scientists, especially the ones that are politically corrupt or have been indoctrinated with a certain belief that they say that they're non-biased, but they're super biased. It's always like they're cutting off their noses to spite their face. Like we're seeing that right now in Arizona. Okay. A few years ago, I'm gonna make myself some enemies here, but I'm not gonna get into specifics of where. So basically what we're having right now is we have a public official with U.S. Fish and Wildlife that is, a few years ago, he wanted to remove a bunch of mesquite trees out of a certain zone, okay? And his reasoning for that was because he was in charge of promoting the masked bobwhite quail, and they're only found in that area of Arizona and into Mexico. And in order to his theory was, let's get rid of these trees so raptors don't have a perch and they can't, you know, decimate these coveys of quails. And another thing that he did was, let's dismantle all the mechanical and concrete style water holes, because the deer in that area, they never had it before, so they don't need it now. And now it's that those politics didn't fly. So while I was down there this year, they're removing tons and tons of these trees everywhere. They're like literally just leveling and just turning it to grassland. And
so they just did away with the cover for the quail.
Right. Well, there's tall grass there. So the quail actually has cover, and there's brush for them. I could see how it might still be fine for the quail, but what's going on is they've removed these trees, and now his narrative is, we're doing it for the deer. We're taking away this cover for the deer. In the 1800s, these mesquite trees weren't here. A lot of those mesquite trees were brought in. From what I understand, they might be from like Argentina or something. I don't know that to be true, because they look like the same mesquite trees that are up here in Phoenix to me. But anyway, they brought these mesquite trees for the cattle operations to create shade and for the cattle and, windbreaks and blah, blah, blah. So now he's basically saying that the deer are going to thrive because we're bringing it back to when they used to thrive back in the 1800s. So this is my argument. This is my argument for wool and reintroduction of wolves. This is my argument for a lot of things, is deer are not like humans in our generation cycle. Okay. So what's a typical generation for humans? 20 years? I think it's 20 years, right? Deer, it's like 4 years, 5 years. So if you go back to the 1800s, and I don't know, I'm not going to do the math right now, but, you know, 200 years, divide that by four, what is that, 50 generations of deer have gotten used to the fact that there's these trees there, have gotten used to the fact that there were these water holes there. So they have slowly adapted. Their bodies have adapted to that. Like, you take that away, you don't think deer are going to die? It's the same thing with like introducing a wolf into an area that they haven't been for hundreds of years. Okay. I didn't really want to go down this road, but I'm going down this road. Like, for me, it's like, they're not, the animals there are not used to evading a wolf.
Right.
Because they've never seen a wolf.
Right.
So there's going to be detrimental, you know, problems with population. There's going to be some extra loss for a while until those animals readapt to the fact that there's wolves on the landscape. So like, all these things need to be considered. And I think everything is so short-sighted. They see what their goal that they want to get, and they never look at everything that's around them that is a factor that plays into this. Like, if you're going to play God, you got to play God. You know what I'm saying? You got to be able to move all the pieces on the chessboard. You can't just say, I'm going to move this pawn right here, and that's an awesome move, because you got to think 10 steps ahead, you know?
Well, and even at that, I mean, we have professionals that's their life. That's what they study. That's what they do. And even they, you know, find that, okay, we make a decision, try and do the best we can. And maybe it went too far this way. And now we've got to work to come back.
It's an educated guess.
That's all it can be. And then when you have people that are just narrow-minded, narrow-sighted, that, you know, this is the goal, heck or high water, you know, we want this to happen. Then there are huge repercussions to that. So, you know, I think we've gotten that point across. And I think we're actually preaching to the choir, but at the same time, what
that's
we're doing
problem,
is
we're always preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
These conversations aren't being had between, hunters and non-hunters. And this one needs to happen. This is a bridge. This is what we were getting about earlier, is that gap needs to be bridged because we're losing the battle because the other side has been talking to the non-hunters.
Right.
Forever.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it's so funny. We become real passive in that. It's like, why am I going to try to explain it to them? Well, you know what? It's time. We need to. And that's really the goal of this show, not only to, we're hoping that not only that we've given you information so that you can go and you can take some action and information so that you can get involved in other actions and understand the impact that you and the numbers of us together, the impact that that can make as well. But we've also done this in order to help you have that intelligent conversation to find those materials so that you can become ambassadors. Because y'all, look, if we don't, then we're being incredibly selfish because our children and our children's children and theirs, they're going to be the ones that are going to lose something that is a huge part of human nature, a huge part of our history of who we are and what we've done and how we've survived. And, you know, it's critical that we change our narrative to be able to include that, you know, to be able to show a picture. And instead of saying necessarily, I mean, we can tell our story how it was done, but also tell the story of how these animals did not even exist here 100 years ago, but it was monies of sportsmen, private landowners, and people that invested in those animals that brought them back from virtual extinction, you know? Right. And you can do that. I mean, get the numbers. It's unbelievable. All of this wildlife that people get to enjoy that say that they don't want them hunting, that wildlife is there because we helped to put it there, right?
Yeah. So. It can't always be about the money, though. Here's the thing, because the money is not – I mean, although it's a very valid reason, and honestly, it's the reason why hunting's still around. But
now, did I mention
it's got to be about it.
Did I mention money someplace in there? Because
The reason why it's – I don't know. At least that's kind of the way I heard it. Maybe I heard what I wanted to hear. But
I'm talking about the passion. I'm talking about the tradition. Yeah. I'm talking about
the passion, the tradition. That has to be. That Absolutely. Has to be part of you. Has to be part of your thing. Can't just be about, you know, we put this into it, and you know that's why we're entitled.
Because well, I see what you're saying. Because of our funds that we've done and yeah,
right. you know. Funding and whatever. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's not my
conservation
point.
Dollars. That argument. Yeah, it's a. I mean, it's honestly a reason why hunting is still around, but it's literally the worst argument we have with the non-hunting public.
Sure.
To an extent.
Sure. And what I'm talking about is, okay, so the monies were something part of the tool to do that, but really it was the passion of people that wanted and
exactly.
loved these animals to see them thrive and come to fruition.
Sure.
Know? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, and you had said something, and it sparked me to. There's a quote out there that like society becomes great when old men plant trees, knowing that they'll never sit underneath the shade of those trees. Mm-hmm. So, like, you got even though it's not going to, you're not going to see the fruits of your labor, basically, for a lot of this stuff. These are things that you need to do so that your children and your children's, your grandchildren will be able to enjoy it and so on and so forth.
Absolutely.
So,
yep.
Yeah.
So do you have any closing words that you'd like to say to everybody, John, before we get out of here?
Yeah. Real quick, I want to circle back to the importance of that management plan. You know, I know I started going off a little bit on management and, you know, reintroduction of stuff and changing things and playing God, whatever. That's why this management plan is important, because it's going to give the people that have boots on the ground the ability to make changes on the fly that are going to direct wildlife in the most positive trajectory. I guess that's the best way I could put it. So go to howlforwildlife.org and click on the Take Action Center. Now, the wolves is one of the actions on there. Right now we're dealing with bears. Right. Washington tomorrow, matter of fact, there's a commission meeting in Washington that we're getting. We're trying to get, you know, bear hunting back on track over there. And we're dealing with a corrupt commission. This is something that's, unfortunately, we're going to start seeing a lot of, especially in the political climate we're in. There are not every state has the laws in place that prevent governors from just appointing whomever they want. You know, they can appoint their cousin Nick, you know, to be a commissioner, and do their bidding. And, or more so do the bidding of the big time, boosters that came up with the money for them to get into office. So, you know, it's important for us to be very involved is basically what I'm saying, is very involved and have our hand on our finger on the pulse and our hands into every single issue that pops up countrywide. And honestly, Howlful Wildlife even get involved in stuff in Canada and possibly even Mexico, because we're all connected. We hunt in Canada. There's a lot of U.S. people who hunt in Canada. A lot of Canadians come to hunt here. And we don't want to see precedents, being set in other countries that could affect our country too.
Sure. Just like what we're talking about from state to state, country to country is one continent, man. Yeah,
we're all paying into the same kitty, you know, it's all going into the same pot somewhere, shape or form. And when I say paying, I'm not just talking about the funding, but,
with time, emotions, and everything.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so.
Yeah. Well, John, I think, this was super. I think this is great information for you guys out there. Go to howlforwildlife.org, try to get involved, be positive, be good ambassadors, and help us to take something that we love so much and to ensure there's going to be here for generations to come. Appreciate you, John.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
All right, man. Take care.